Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to yet another episode of Foul Territory here on Blog Talk Radio, brought to you by BackSportsPage.com and SidelinesApp.com.
It's your host, Asa Dalabil, coming to you live. It's 6:30. We're a half hour late today. We apologize for the delay, but we're here now, and you're here now, and that means we're here now together. And it's right where I want to be, talking sports with all of my favorite Foul Territorians. And to boot, Carson Phillips Spots will be joining me in just a few short minutes. We've got lots of stuff to cover today. The Hawks are playing tonight in a pivotal Game 5. Who knew that would be something anybody would say at this point in the year? I certainly didn't. Indiana Pacers certainly didn't. The Atlanta Braves, unfortunately, just had their 9-game winning streak against the Nationals snapped. Jordan Zimmerman just threw 8 shutout innings. But the Braves are still riding high on top of the National League East. And last but certainly not least, the NFL draft happened last week. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, the biggest moment in many a young college student's life. These guys, 7 rounds. It's a lot of meat. It's a lot of beefcakes. It's a lot of athletes. It's a lot of dudes hugging. Hours and hours of it. It's now on 3 different days. They've stretched the draft out, so it takes 3 days because it's now a viewing spectacle. But we're going to cover that. We're going to cover the Falcons' top draft choices. We're going to analyze that, break down a trade that Thomas Dimitroff made to get into the 22nd slot to take certain Trufant brother. We're going to discuss some of the other guys, the fourth rounders, who might have an impact, and the Falcons drafting a quarterback. So who knows? Matt Ryan, watch out for your job. We'll get to that. We'll get to jersey numbers because those have been selected. That's always fun to look at what the newcomers have chosen to be their numerals. Without further delay.
It's real.
Oh, snap. Right on time. It's Carson Phillips Spots. What's going on, my man?
I'm here.
Let me wrap up my intro. That was perfect.
No, not too much, man. Just here checking in for the East Coast. Heard the rundown. Sounds phenomenal. Glad to be here talking sports once again on a lovely Wednesday evening.
Yeah. Have you been watching this Hawks series? Have you been keeping pace with the Hawks Pacers?
I have. The first 2 games were pretty tough to watch. We just got absolutely demolished. However, the past 2 games at home have been phenomenal. The game I caught, I want to say it was on Monday, when the Hawks, won pretty handily, but definitely some exciting moments. The highlight factory, Phillips, when he was rocking. So definitely good to see the Hawks tied up. Now we'll have to see what's going on in terms of an away game.
Yeah, no doubt. They're down 7 right now. It's early in the third quarter. Third quarter really just started. They're down 50-43, and they were hanging and banging with the Pacers for a while. The Pacers eventually got some separation thanks to David West going absolutely nuts in the first half, 8 of 10 from the floor. And maybe a layup or two, but a lot of 15, 18-footers. He's just got a real nice stroke.
But, you know, nobody thought the Hawks would be here. If they somehow pull this off and have a chance to clinch at home, I mean, that would shock so many people. I don't think people gave the Knicks credit necessarily going into the playoffs as a team that could legitimately challenge the Heat. And though they looked that way for the first three games of their series, I think a lot of people probably thought the Pacers were a team who had as good a chance to challenge the Heat as the Knicks did. And now the Pacers really, you know, being handled by the Hawks, at least in Atlanta.
Yeah, that's a good point. And, I mean, like you said, I think the Pacers did give the Heat a certain level of difficulty in the playoffs last year. Granted, the Heat were playing without Chris Bosh for that series. However, I think they got credit for that, you know, coming into this year's playoffs. You look at it, too, you know, the Knicks also struggling against the Seas right now. They have them against the ropes. Seas pull off a nice win at home a few days ago. Now they're up 8 with, like, a minute left to go in the game. The Celtics are. So some crazy things going down in the basketball world, especially with two teams that were sort of expected to give the Heat, which are, you know, sitting high and mighty right now, a run for their money.
Absolutely. And so that's a little snapshot of the East for everybody out there. The West has some intrigue of its own, especially the team out here in the Bay. And talk about fun to watch. The Golden State Warriors have just had a resurgent season fueled by a really good second half. Steph Curry in the second half was one of the 10 best players on the planet, easy, and I think might be making a move towards superstar status. He has to prove something in this playoffs, but you know, they're in a position coming back home to clinch the series against Denver, and he's doing it without David Lee, who's the second leading scorer for the team during the course of the season, pretty much averaged a double-double, and, you know, maybe a guy who struggles on defense, but a hustle player, a leader on the team, and without him, I believe he went down in the first or the second game, Steph has really taken control, and, you know, you saw the Nuggets really beating him up. They're doing all they can to slow him down, but he's at about 30 points a game with 10 assists per game in this series. So I don't know. Do you think he's an elite player, whether he wins the series or not, or do you think it kind of hinges on what he can do in this series?
I'm gonna start you off with a quote I saw from Mark Jackson, who is the coach of Golden State. Not only a coach, he was a great NBA player, had a nice long career as a guard. And he said of Steph Curry and Klay Thompson that his team has the best shooting front court he's ever seen.
Backcourt. But, yeah.
Backcourt, excuse me. Which is coming from him, you know, a huge vote of confidence, I think. I was pretty astonished to hear that from him. I feel like if it was any other analyst, you know, if it was Skip Bayless, that means something. But, you know, Mark Jackson's a guy who's played the game, been around the game for a long time. And to say that, you know, that's the best backcourt, he's seen in the game is pretty special. I think it says a lot about Steph Curry specifically, as he is the leader of that team. And I do think playoff success is going to, you know, play a big factor. And if he makes that transition, into a superstar role, I think now that the playoffs have been set, and, you know, the games that people can watch are limited. And, you know, as you go further into the playoffs, so the intrigue and the speculation and the attention that it draws increases. So there's only more of an opportunity, for him to sort of raise his status, if he can get past this series and beyond. So I definitely think he's a special player, and I think that, you know, playoff success will have a lot to do with name recognition and him sort of taking that step.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. They always say the NFL is the what have you done for me lately league. Well, really any pro sport is when this much is on the line, when this much money and fan interest and everything else is on the line. And maybe Mark Jackson isn't exaggerating with that statement. Maybe he's just early, you know, because he gets to see these guys every day in practice in the games. And it's funny, I heard Jalen Rose say it today again on the radio that Steph is the best shooter in the NBA. And it's like, wow, whoa, you're forgetting about somebody named Kevin Durant pretty quickly. And I think, you know, there's definitely an argument there. It's not clearly one way or the other. But just the fact that he's been good enough to vault himself into the conversation, or maybe as the leader between him and Durant as the best overall shooter in the NBA, it's amazing, and it's true. He passes the eye test. The numbers are there. I mean, it's just such a pretty quick release. And, you know, he's not big. He's a little guy, but he can get himself free. And really the development this year even more so has been his complete play and his ability. You know, he's obviously stayed healthy. That's been a part of it. The ankle, the Nuggets were going after him a little bit in the game, setting some low picks, you know, coming after him in the lane and knocking him down, which is what you do. That's playoff basketball. But, yeah, that is high praise. I mean, that best shooting backcourt ever is, you know, and for all the people that Mark Jackson played against and saw play and have been in his lifetime, that is incredibly high praise. So the Warriors doing work, and Kevin Durant, who we were talking about, trying to carry the Thunder without his running mate, Russell Westbrook, which I think they could probably still go pretty far. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely going to be, you know, really contingent on KD, obviously, to sort of make that run. Westbrook, people sort of overlook him at times, but he's a highly, highly productive point guard. You can call him that. He's sort of a hybrid point two guard. But I think, you know, after watching the series last year, you sort of think that if the team sort of grows and develops, you know, they can challenge the Heat for that title. But I think without Russell Westbrook, it's going to become a lot harder just in terms of having that consistent guy, consistent offense, you know, away from Kevin Durant. I think, you know, Kmart's going to have to take a big step up. Some of the guys coming off the bench are going to really have to do some things that sort of augment that offense that's going to be going, you know, now that Westbrook's up. You know, you can't expect to have someone to come and plug in and take a spot. I think that you have to schematically and personnel-wise sort of make some changes to sort of complement KD's game and get other people some good looks. So I think it's going to, you know, gonna be dependent on how the Thunder can sort of, you know, adjust, you know, both schematically and personnel-wise to see if they can make that next step.
Yeah, I'm just excited to see. You know, I mean, we've seen it in these last few games, and they have game five, I guess, starting in just a few minutes between Houston and Oklahoma City back in Oklahoma. I mean, he is the second best player on the planet. I don't think there's a whole heck of a lot of discussion. And while LeBron does more things than KD does, and while he uses his athleticism, is just more potent because of how powerful he is, KD is still, you know, has the ability to just dominate a game on both ends. And it'll be interesting to see if he's able to maintain the offensive production, just the energy, really, to work for the ball, to always demand the ball, and because he'll have to bring the ball up a lot. And in a series like, imagine if Memphis makes it through and also the Thunder, he's going to have to be playing some real defense on big men. You know, he plays the four sometimes, or Oklahoma City's going to have to go big. You know, if he has to defend Zach Randolph on the post, I mean, that's a mismatch, but it's also just going to tire him out. So, I don't know. Durant definitely has the ability to carry a team, but you're right. I mean, Westbrook is also probably a top 10 player in the league. So, you can't underestimate how much you miss him. It's easy to put him down for turnovers and what sometimes seem like hurried shots with not within the rhythm of the offense. But he also makes a lot of those shots, even when you're saying, oh, no, swish. Okay, Russell, well, what the hell? And then on the fast break, he's simply unstoppable. He's a young D. Wade plus an extra 3 inches of vert. I mean, and an extra nasty streak. I mean, the dude is totally lethal in the open court, and they'll miss him. They'll definitely miss him. But the West is wide open, and I was watching the game with a bunch of Warrior fans, and we're getting excited about it, and it sucks that it happens because of an injury, but at this point, I mean, the Warriors, obviously the Spurs are no small challenge. The Spurs still have the Warriors number, but the West just feels wide open right now, and a team like the Warriors
probably feels that little bit extra excitement because it looks more wide open.
Yeah, and that is true, and, you know, that sort of opens the door to more teams and sort of the playoff scenario sort of changed in terms of, you know, especially thinking about how the representative from the West can match up against a Miami Heat. Because, I mean, to be frank with you, it's, I don't see Miami losing in the Eastern Conference. I don't see them having trouble with any team, you know, in the East. And I think, you know, they'll be the representative out of the East. So I think, you know, a lot of it depends on, you know, looking at the West moving forward, how these teams sort of match up against the Heat, you know, which I think, you know, for the Warriors, I'm not sure exactly how that's going to work out. But it's definitely cool to see more teams in the running. And like you said, the Spurs are there and them with Nelly, excuse me, with Pop. Always a struggle despite the sort of aging roster. But definitely, you know, things to look forward to in the West, and the Heat after Heat, playoffs are heating up, always a fun time for the basketball world.
Yeah, no doubt. And unfortunately, the Hawks at this point are down 12. The Pacers have clamped the defensive grips on them, and they only have 46 points midway through the third quarter. So I don't want to ring the doomsday bell, but the Atlanta just doesn't have the firepower to mount a comeback on this Pacers team. Maybe if Lou Williams was still around, maybe then. But they just – Teague, he's great when he's getting in the paint, but he's not a guy who's going to really create outside shots for himself. And Korver could be a great shooter, but isn't great at creating for himself. Devin Harris has played a horrible game from what I've seen so far. So – the Hawks are in a mess of trouble. But enough with that. Let's talk football, Carson. The draft. Holy shit.
We've
spent many drafts together. This is one that we had to spend apart. But it's always the same weekend as the Eamon Park Festival. And it's always the same weekend that Roger Goodell hugs the most people throughout the course of the year. I mean, that is his hugging day. And that was the Paul Tagliabue's hugging day and everybody else. So let's talk about the Falcons draft, because there was some intrigue at the top of the draft, and we can talk about how some of those picks kind of just lined up. I don't remember the exact top 10 that you had, but I remember some of the slots. But let's talk about the Falcons first. So sitting there at number 30, that's where you're at when you lose in the NFC Championship game. And
you have a fire record.
Exactly. And you got that good record, and 30 wasn't high enough. Thomas Dimitroff, never a shy one on draft day, never one to shy away from trading picks, moves up 8 spots so he can take cornerback Desmond Trufant out of UW Washington. He gave up a 3rd-rounder and a 6th-rounder. To me, great deal if he was your guy. They said that was the guy they were looking at. He was largely considered the 3rd-best corner in the class, you know, maybe competing for the 2nd-best, probably considered the best one-on-one defender, though, I think, if I'm not mistaken, the best island corner, in other words. How do you feel about the pick? Desmond Trufant, younger brother of Marcus Trufant, and then had another brother in the league. How do you feel about this?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I like it, and the more I sort of look at things and think about it, it makes sense. I think when you look at the corners taken ahead of him, when you look at Dean Milner, obviously, you know, went top 10. A guy was highly regarded out of Alabama. And then you got the young man out of Houston. Forgot what his name was. And then you got Desmond Trufant that sort of fell to us, or we moved up to get him at 22. I think it's a good pick, Asian. Like you said, he comes from a football pedigree. He's been around professionals his entire life. And he's expected to come in day one and start opposite
Dabadoos.
So, I think that's good for us. And when you look at our draft as a whole, you just sort of, you know, when you look at our team and its makeup and the guys that we ended up losing last year, it just makes, you know, more and more sense in terms of where guys are expected to come in and contribute. I think Desmond Trufant is a good example of that. He's definitely had to face some good wide receivers in the Pac-12. So, you know, I'm really intrigued, and you know, he's a bigger guy, 6 foot, 186. So look forward to him stepping into camp, you know, day one as a starter at cornerback.
Yeah, no doubt. And one thing philosophically about this draft, we knew the Falcons were going to go after secondary. They made it a priority with their first two picks. And as in any sport, there's an efficiency to be had, which is especially important when you have a salary cap, efficiency to be had with young players, because the rookie wage scale was changed in the NFL. The young players that are high picks don't get paid such outrageous amounts. Desmond Trufant at 22 isn't going to cost the Falcons a whole lot. And if you're paying a starter over at corner, a very important position, you know, maybe $1 million, which is still a wonderful amount of money, but you're saving a lot of money, which you're spending elsewhere. We know it's a high-cost offense. Tony G coming back for a year, you still got to pay him. You're paying Steven Jackson. You're paying Roddy. And you got to pony up and pay Matt Ryan. So it's important to get talent, but also important to get this cost-effective talent. And that's what they were thinking when they went back-to-back corners, which surprised me a little bit. I was hoping we'd go after a pass rusher with one of those top two picks. But the Falcons take the consensus, I believe, top non-D1 player in Robert Alford, or non-FBS player in Robert Alford. And that surprised a few people, but I also heard some draft experts saying this was a savvy choice.
Yeah, I mean, I think as soon as the pick went up, you know, like you said, he's a guy out of small school, southeastern Louisiana. Like you said, not FCS school. But, I mean, if you look at this guy's tape, I mean, he absolutely dominated. He's like a young Deion Sanders. You know, I mean, his ball skills, he was just making some crazy catches. And then he also played offense. They had him at offense catching passes as a receiver. So, obviously, this guy did play down to the competition. He definitely excelled at the level he was at. And I looked at, you know, some draft analysis a little while ago, and this pick makes sense as well. When you see that our buddy Chris Owens, you know, love-hate relationship with him, mostly hate, but he definitely stepped up last year and did some good things with the nickel corner. I think Robert Alford is going to be expected to compete for that nickel corner position. You know, as you know, the NFC South is not light on great receivers and great quarterbacks, so I think that's, you know, a good pick as well. He'll help us out on special teams. I think he can return some kicks, you know, if they let Harry Douglas get a break on that. But, I mean, this kid's intriguing. And you look at his tape, like I said, his hands are absurd. Some of the interceptions he makes, he looks as fluent as a receiver. So, you know, I think I'm excited to see how he does. He did well in the Senior Bowl practices against some top flight competition. So, you know, looking forward to camp, look forward to him making some strides and getting into the mix at that nickel corner position.
Yeah, and the thing is, you talk about the competition that he'll face specifically in our division, but really across the league. In our division, we got three really talented quarterbacks outside of our team. Two of them haven't really put it all together yet, obviously talking about Cam Newton as the first one. But and Freeman as the second one, but you know they're big arm quarterbacks who can throw down the field. Tampa Bay put together a really talented offense, really actually a very good team, and you always have to worry about Drew Brees. So against these teams, there is a quote unquote base defense that the Falcons run, but that base defense, I'm 100% sure, gets fewer snaps than the nickel defense or than some other defense where you've got, you know, 4, 5, 6 defensive backs out there. So nickel corner is, you know, that's as important a starter as middle linebacker in some ways on a defense like this. And Alford could get a real share of playing time. So it sounds like it'll be Alford and Trufant joining the mix with Robert McClain, who made some strides last year as a pretty good trio, kind of filling in behind Asante, who's obviously the emotional and talent leader of that group.
definitely. Like you said, that nickel position is definitely very important, and especially the way teams are set up. You know, nickel guys might play as many snaps as the two starting corners. So, definitely interesting to see him. I'm intrigued by the pick. But, you know, as we go along in the draft, you know, you also see other picks that are made out of necessity. I want to go now to the fourth-round pick with Malachi Goodman, the defensive end out of Clemson, a guy 6'4", 270. He is, you know, more of a typical sort of run-stopper, stuffer type. You know, he does offer some in the pass rush game, but that's not his forte, that's not his specialty. And I think that's, you know, to make up for the loss in Abraham. You know, we can't, you know, replace him, you know, just with one pick or off the bat. I mean, we got Ewan York coming in as a free agent, and then we got Corey Dimon at the other end. But as you know, actually, we like to rotate in defensive ends, and we use multiple. So look for him to be involved in that mix too, spelling, you know, Bierman or OC, if they need to break in the game or presenting a team a different look.
Yeah, I did hear some mixed reviews about the Goodman pick, and I agree that we do need depth because the years where, or even the games where our D-line has played well, it's been a rotation of 7-8 guys, sometimes at the most, who really contributed. So, you know, you're right, it's not one guy, especially where we're picking in the draft, who's going to make that huge leap. Maybe you tank this entire season and try to get Clowney, but I don't know. I think the Falcons are a little too good to do that. Joking, of course. But I wonder, are they happy with their DTs? Because we're giving them credit for these picks, and we should, but we should also question their picks a little bit too. And Jason Babineau and Pariah Jerry, it's a solid combo. It's nothing to write home about. Really, the whole D-line, even kind of a best case, I guess best case scenario for OC is back to his former self, which that would be incredible. But more likely is that the four starters on the D-line, really pretty average, not any real difference makers. They all can play well for stretches, but no dominant guys. Do the Falcons need at least one dominant guy on the D-line to make a leap? I mean, do they need that for their defense to get to the level, you know, to compete for a championship?
Yeah, I mean, it's, I think what you said, you know, definitely has merit, and that is true. You know, looking at the depth chart right now, you know, not too many guys that jump out the page. And you said OC historically has done really well, but you know, no one knows sort of what he's going to offer, you know, as he comes to a new team. What I do think is going to be important. If you look at a team like the Giants that has a tremendous pass rush, they just have, you know, a bunch of guys that can get it done. Guys that are sort of nightmares to match up with athletically. You know, you can cycle in guys, you know, Pierre Paul, Kiwanuka, Tuck. You know, all those guys have the ability to play both the pass and the run, and they can use multiple sets and sort of have, you know, present offenses difficult looks. You know, in that group, I wouldn't say there's one guy that's just outstanding, that's just, you know, 100% superstar on that, you know, defensive line. You know, maybe Pierre Paul is emerging, just in terms of being solid. But when you have a group of guys that can all get it done, I think that's really important. And that's going to depend, Ace, because, I mean, when you look at the guys on the line that we have right now, you know, not all of those guys, I think, can be as big a threat, you know, like the defensive line from New York. So, hopefully with the guys that we get in, you know, this year in the draft, you know, we can do enough to present, you know, different looks, have guys specialize in different aspects and just start using mix. And hopefully that you know, that'll be sufficient in getting the job done. But like you said, definitely an agreement. There's not one guy on the D-line that stands out. You know, let's just say, like, this guy, you know, needs to be blocked, needs to be double-teamed, you know, besides OC, and he hasn't done that in some time.
Yeah, you're right. And it's hard to get that guy if you don't have a lot of high picks. I mean, we've had, you know, a lot of winning seasons, and, you know, there are guys like that that go later on in the draft, but especially now, I mean, D-end is where a lot of the premium talent is and where, you know, it's drafted.
is high. So let's talk about the offensive side of the ball. The Falcons, coming into the offseason, not into the draft, but into the offseason, potentially had some question marks on offense. They cut Michael Turner. Tony Gonzalez was retiring. So with the draft looming and free agency, they had to find some combination of a new running back and a new tight end to fit their needs. And as we all know, Tony Gonzalez decided to come back, which fills a major hole. And then they picked up Steven Jackson, who one of the best running backs of the decade in the later years of his career, but still an excellent addition. So all of a sudden, the Falcons were able to focus on defense, but they finally did pick an offensive player in Levine Toilolo, the 6'8 tight end. And how excited are we? Tony is this, but we finally might have one of these new age tight end, quote unquote, matchup nightmare dudes who now is going to train under the greatest tight end of all time. That's real exciting to me for the future as well as next year.
Yeah, no, definitely. And, you know, I think he's a guy, like you said, he's 6'8". He's a big guy, 260. You know, he can get it done both in the run game and blocking and in the pass game, you know, catching passes. And like you said, I think a guy that is, you know, both serviceable in the run and the pass really gives us the advantage in the fact that we can have two tight end sets, you know, put them both on the line of scrimmage, you know, ram the ball down a team's throat, or we can flex Tony out and have him on the line, or flex them both out, and just, you know, sort of send them upfield and create mismatches with smaller linebackers or DBs. So, you know, really being able to work him in slowly into the offense, and like you said, under the tutelage of Tony Gonzalez, I think we really have an opportunity to create something special here in terms of just the guy's stature and size. And when you look at Tony, you know, he can't be left alone on the field. And he, you know, you have to draw attention to him. And he's always a threat to catch that pass for a first down. And if we get, you know, if we get Levine into the pass game early and he's, you know, he can show that he can catch passes and do things to help our offense, it's just going to be even more of a matchup nightmare when you look at, you know, having all those four guys on the field at the same time with Tony, Roddy, Julio, and hopefully young Levant. So definitely interested to see how this works out, and hopefully he just hits the ground running, you know, picks up the offense smoothly. But I think this, you know, him, his ability to make a mark on the offense really gives us a lot of flexibility in what we do.
Yeah, I hope they add two games to the regular season just so the Falcons will have enough touches to go around. Honestly, this offense is loaded. And so, okay, so they take Goodman, they take Lolo, then they take one of the best names in the draft, Stansley Mapanga, a D-end. Then they go Zeke Madet, safety, who probably will make the team, or a good chance to make the team at least as a special teamer. But I want to talk about the last pick of the draft because I teased this at the top, and Falcons fans everywhere are fretting. They're saying, why haven't you talked about this by now? Is Matt Ryan's job in jeopardy? And maybe, because young Sean Renfrey, seventh-round pick, quarterback, and he's out of Duke, is that right?
Out of Duke, yes, sir.
Out of Duke.
Yeah.
And as soon as he was picked, they said that he's a very cerebral quarterback. And I said, you're typecasting a Duke quarterback because maybe he's an athletic freak. But, no, it's an intriguing pick, and it's good value if he can be a real backup in the seventh round. Do you think there's any way he's a quarterback of the future?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a possibility that he, like you said, makes a team. Chris Redmond, I'm not sure what exactly he's doing with his life right now. I'm not sure how long, you know, he wants to play football, to be honest. But, I mean, he's currently the backup quarterback. And, I mean, you know, if he's going to get a lot of run in the preseason, he's going to have an opportunity to show his stuff. And, you know, in the preseason games, as you know, quarterbacks play very little. I think the second-string quarterback probably plays the least, especially, you know, in our situation where Redmond's a proven veteran who's just sort of there for the ride. So he'll definitely have the opportunity to show his stuff in the preseason. And, you know, best case scenario, I mean, you never want to see especially with a franchise quarterback like Matt Ryan. You never want to see another guy taking snaps in the regular season, but, you know, unless it's a blowout, obviously. You know, best case scenario, he, you know, has success, and we're able to trade him for some picks. So, he's definitely he's an intriguing pick. And we'll see how he does in the preseason, but definitely a seasoned guy and had a great deal of success at Duke. I'm sure he's a smart one too.
Well, Carson, that was some excellent analysis on the football side of things for these seven picks. And like we said, the Falcons traded away a couple, but they had a couple compensatory picks from free agent signing, so that's how they ended up with seven. So, like I said, great analysis on the football side of things. Now we're going to go over to the superstition side of things, an equally valid point of analysis in all sports, really, and one of the great superstitions in sports are numbers, whether that's stats or, you know, the outfield footage on the wall in a baseball stadium. Those are numbers. The more important number, though, is the one you wear, because that is the one you identify with throughout your career. And the numbers came out today for the Falcons picks. They chose their numbers. Obviously, they weren't getting any numbers that were already taken. There was nothing they could do to coax it out of anyone as a rookie. So they, you know, they had to settle for the 75, or I guess only about 50 numbers that weren't already taken. But I'm going to go through the players and their number, and you tell me how the number feels. You know, is it a good number for this guy? You think he went a little aggressive, or, you know, are there maybe some great identifying factors with other players who share that number? You know, what could be the influences? We're going to go through that. So, starting at the top, young Mr. Trufant, a.k.a. CB2, he took number 21. A Falcons corner, we're in 21.
Wow.
I wonder.
You already know the connection I'm making right here. That's special. And, you know, hopefully if he can give us 1/4 of what, you know, the greatest 21 of all time can give us, that'd be, I love it, though. I absolutely love it. That's beautiful. So all obviously according to neon standards.
To be honest, I don't think we have any numbers retired. I mean, I don't know. I thought Vic would be the first one, but obviously that hasn't worked out. But, I mean, that's awesome. I'll say that.
Yeah. All right. Well, Desmond Trufant getting aggressive already. He's ready to play. He's ready to be in the prime time. And, all right, so moving right along to Mr. Small School, a.k.a. Chip on the Shoulder, a.k.a. Robert Alford. He chose, call him Jumpman, he's number 23.
Okay, I like that as well. That's Dunta Robinson's number previously. So that opened up, and I think that was his number in college. So that's a good fit. 23 is a good DB number, and obviously his airness, Michael Jordan. I like 23 in any sport, and hopefully he can come in and replace Dunta, you know, at that cornerback spot.
Lansom Woods. So the great thing, though, now, we all know that Asante Samuel's best nickname, I don't know if it's only one, it's his best one, is Dabba Deuce. So now we have 21, 22, and 23 out there
on
the defensive backfield. It just feels right. Feels right to me.
That's
so
beautiful.
Good job, Mr. Alford, for keeping that going. Moving over to the line, down in the trenches, Malachi Goodman, rocking number 93. How do you feel about this as a former lineman yourself?
93, I like it, and I think that as a D lineman, the 90s are definitely intimidating numbers, and you look at, you know, Warren Sapp wearing the double 99. And I want to say Ray Edwards was 92. Someone that, you know, Malachi might be perceived as replacing. So 93, I can't complain. These numbers are beautiful right now.
They're beautiful. And moving right along to the offensive side of the ball, Mr. Toilolo, he's joining a very, very decorated group in the 80s. I'm talking about 84, Mr. White,
88, Mr. Gonzalez, and is it 81, Mr. Jones, I believe. So Lolo's going with 80, and that's a good solid one for a tight end, I believe.
Yeah, I think 80 is very solid. I think that's a pretty classic tight end number. And I'm not sure about the restrictions. I know the number restrictions are different from college to the pros, but I like it. I mean, I it's a good mix we have going. I guess Julio's going to be the odd man out with 11, but I love 11 on him. So,
oh right, it's 11.
I think traditional tight end number.
Yeah, for sure. Good symmetry across that line. So Stanley Mapunga, that's a fun one to say. Going with 99, like you said, Warren Sapp. I'm sure there's a lot of other Mapunga level sack masters that have gone with the highest two-digit number that there is. So, Mr. Mapunga making a splash with his number selection already.
That is fierce.
Already. Zeke Mata, 41. I don't know. That doesn't do much for me. But
no,
then again,
I don't like 41 at all. That sounds very unathletic. I feel like that's something a fullback should wear. So we'll see if he makes the team. He might get cut just because of that.
Yeah, Zeke Mata, grandnephew of Thad Mata. No, I don't know if that's true. But and Sean Renfrey taking 12 now. As I was in my pregame notes in the zone, so to speak, prepping for the show, and I saw that Sean Renfrey was 12, I was thinking, okay, one, maybe he's 12 in college, and so then we have no story. But if he wasn't, maybe he gets 12 as an homage to Matty Ice because he's 2, so 12 is like the little brother of 2. And he's like, hey, man, bring me up. I wanna learn under you, Matthew Icicles. And I don't know. Might be a little homage to the Icicle.
The homage to the Icicle, I do like that angle. First thing that came to my mind was Chris Chandler. Didn't he wear 12?
Who?
Chris Chandler.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yep. I don't know. Maybe he did. If so, maybe that's one to avoid. But no,
he did wear 12. He did wear 12. It's just confirmed by the interns. Wow. Yeah, I mean, that's we have Deion and Chris Chandler back in action.
It's the good old days down in Atlanta. And, the Braves lost. We mentioned that. But the Falcons, that's exciting. And it's really not even that long until they start having all their practices and training camps and shit. So already time to start getting excited for another Super Bowl run. I mean, there's no other way. We're past the point of no return for this Falcons team. It's put up or shut up. And last year they got almost as close as you could possibly come to getting to the Super Bowl. But, they have the talent. There's no question they have the talent. There's a lot of power out west with Seattle and San Francisco, especially after this offseason. But it's hard to say that the Falcons themselves didn't keep pace with their moves. Definitely don't have the defense on the level of those two teams, but as they showed, when it came down to the head-to-head matchups, they were the equal of Seattle, and they went blow for blow with San Francisco.
Yeah, definitely. And like you said, exciting times ahead. Like I said, we've made our moves to sort of keep up with the league, and because we all know that, San Fran and Seattle had a great offseason, so excited for the young Bucks, heading into camp. Looking forward to seeing some young faces on the field come fall.
Yeah, no doubt. The top of the draft wasn't too shocking. Eric Fisher, a Central Michigan guy, went number one, which just seems kind of cool. But, the other tackles going early, the guards going early, like people predicted. And so I'm trying to think of some things that might have surprised you. Your boy Zeke Ansah fell. Or no, did he go to the Lions?
He went to the Lions at 5, yeah.
Oh, yeah, so he didn't fall. Never mind. He was right there. We could talk about the quarterbacks, but I don't think that's that shocking, to be honest. Like, I don't know. This was
there's always someone who shoots up the board, and we did have one guy this year, but
on the mock that I did a couple weeks ago, I had Deion Jordan going one overall, which is ambitious, and he ended up going three. But I think that was a pretty exciting move just in terms of the team he went to, the Dolphins. You know, he's supposed to play, you know, in college he was an edge rusher, you know, played a down defensive end, expected to make the move to outside linebacker. And I'm pretty sure Miami runs a 4-3 defense, so he'll need to play a traditional defensive role. I think a lot of people, linebacking role at the outside linebacker position. I think a lot of folks were surprised at that.
Yeah, that's true. I didn't think about
was that a reach or what?
I didn't think about the Miami scheme change. And, yeah, no, let me actually give you some props for that one, because you had him going number one overall, which was a little ambitious, but he still went three, which I don't think a lot of people necessarily saw coming. They knew he'd shot up the board and was probably a top 10 pick, but to trade up to three for him, the Raiders were able to pick up some nice value by getting that spot. So, you know, the Dolphins really, really fell in love with this guy, and from the tape, you can definitely tell why, and you can definitely get excited for him as an NFL player. One thing that I saw, things just registered for me a little bit more when they were fantasy picks, in theory, and Eddie Lacy falling all the way to the end of the second round and going to the Packers, hell of a steal to me. There could not really have been a better team for him to go to for the team's sake. I mean, for his sake, obviously he won't be the focal point of the offense, but really just can slide into that really crazy passing attack and provide some needed relief for Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, and you know, we debated this here in Atlanta when making the pick, and like I said, I thought it was an outstanding pick by Green Bay. Others are saying, you know, that's not the place he needs to go because of the pass-heavy attack. But, I mean, when you get some semblance of a run game and you're able to throw a ball like you do with Aaron Rodgers and those weapons they have on the outside, you know, when you touch the football on the ground, you know, it's going to go for big games. When you have a guy like Eddie Lacy that, you know, could be a feature back on most teams in the league, yeah, that's a passing attack that's so, so potent. He's going to have, you know, a great amount of success if he can get in, you know, learn the playbook, get in tune with the offense on the pass blocking schemes. And if he can be in on the field all three downs, he's definitely going to be a real asset to that team.
Wait, so what was the argument against that pick? Or what was the criticism of that
saying,
pick?
Just saying that he wouldn't get as many touches as he would on, you know, let's say a Giants team or
a
team that relies on the ground game.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. That's fair, but at the end of the second round, you can afford to make a luxury pick. And, yeah, maybe it won't be quite as good for Lacy. You know, he'll definitely have to pass block a lot if he wants to be a three-down back like you're saying. But he's going to get some touchdowns too, man. I mean, they go up and down the field, and there's – you know, Aaron Rodgers, he's not looking to prove that he is the best in the league. I think a lot of people think he is the best in the league. He's got a Super Bowl title. He's not the kind of guy who's going to have anything against a running back punching it in when they get down in the red zone, I wouldn't think.
I think when you look at, you know, the offense might be heavy pass, but, like, you know, the touches he will get are going to be significant touches. They'll go for long. And he's been running against nickel defenses, you know, seven-man fronts, people outside of the box. I think he's a downhill runner. He's going to have, you know, a lot of success, you know, if he sort of works out the kinks. But I think it's a phenomenal pick for them. Kind of upset they got him. You know, like you said, it's a luxury for them. But, you know, it is what it is, and they did a good job, you know, getting a guy.
Yeah, they definitely did. Well, I feel like that about does it for the draft. We really covered the Falcons guys in depth and gave you a little taste of what happened at the top. But in reality, most of these first-round picks won't be better than average players. Most of these picks won't be on a roster a year
from now, or I don't know, that was an aggressive statement, but I think it might be true. So, you know, it's about, it really is, when you think about how these guys look on film, the draft process is so deceiving. You know, you're seeing the raw talent, you're seeing the measurables, but what we're not seeing is the part that the teams were able to see when they interviewed these guys, or the part that the teams weren't able to see because they didn't ask the right questions, and, you know, these, you know, the guys are well-trained to answer them, and a guy with character issues, yeah, he wants to go higher in the draft too, so he's going to try to hide his quote-unquote character issues. He's been trained, you know, the way guys prep for the draft now is insane, so we'll see what happens. It's all about the work ethic at this point, and whether these guys, you know, they're all, you can talk about the measurables, but it's like, oh my God, he's a 6'8", 300-pound tackle. Well, so is every single starting tackle in the NFL. Well, he's a rangy 6'4", 230 tight end. Okay, every team has a guy like that. So the talent's there. There's no question with all of these guys. They're all deserving to have a chance in the NFL, but you know, there's a lot that has to happen between now and them scoring a touchdown or getting on the field at all. Let's talk about the Braves a little bit before we wrap up. I think we'll do about 10 more minutes, so we can chat a little baseball. And they're off to a hot start. They did lose tonight, finally in the double digits in losses, down to up to 10. So they're at 17-10. And the loss was disappointing because they had been crushing the Nats, 5 straight victories on the year. They swept them at their place, and today they were going for the sweep at our place, but couldn't muster any offense. Paul Mahomes threw another good game to bounce back from his bad Detroit start. He only allowed a 2-run homer, then he retired, about 14 straight guys. So the offense just really didn't do anything against Jordan Zimmermann. And while the Braves can score a lot of runs, and they have a ton of home runs, and Dustin Upton has got to be a leading MVP candidate, they've also been shut out 5 times this year, which is the most in the majors. And honestly, that's unacceptable. You can't be that streaky, especially when you have this good of a pitching staff, that you're going to get shut out. And probably a lot of those shutouts were 1-0, 2-0, 3, 4-0 games that, you know, you get a little bit of mojo going on offense and give your pitcher something to work with, and you have a chance in those games. So great start to the year. Hard to bitch too much when you're 7 games over 500, but you hate to leave any of these on the table, and you hate to waste great starting pitching, and that's what the Atlanta Braves have had. Basically, apart from that Detroit series, they've been straight up dominant. The Detroit series and the Pirates series really were the two where they got lit up, but it was only a few guys, and even Tehran has been settling down a little bit. He beat Strasburg the other day. I don't know if he got the win, and probably the score changed in the later innings, but
I mean, he got the win.
Did he get the win? Okay.
Yeah, he did.
I like that, see? But, you know, the offense has got – some guys got to get on base, and somebody's got to hit besides Justin Upton. And I love Gattis, but he's really fallen off. It's good to have Freddie back, but we need to find stability at the top of the order. And I think it's really going to hurt having Hayward out because he's only out for a couple more weeks. But who knows if this is kind of a lingering thing. And I hope it's not, of course. I hope from the bottom of my heart my man crush is fine. However, these things do happen. You know, it will linger from time to time. Injuries stick around, and if you're not fully healthy, if you're not back and you try to come back, who knows? I mean, the Braves, being off to a hot start lets you be patient with guys, and we've seen that with McCann and with Beachy. And they're both due back soon. So even having Hayward out, we've already got Freeman back. So, you know, if injuries happen, that's the message here. They happen, but you want to limit them. You know, once an injury happens, you want to deal with it the right way. You want to make sure you're all the way back. So, you know, you're helping the team when you're back. So you're not a black hole in the lineup again. And that's the thing about Hayward. He's been struggling, then he got hurt. So he's got to both come back from the injury. And also kind of there's nothing to go back to because it was such a bad start that he doesn't have anything to point to before the injury to say, well, I need to get back to that. So it's going to be a long way back for him. B.J. Upton's been an absolute disaster so far. but 7 games over .500. So that's just me, Mr. Stormy Cloud. You know what I mean?
I know what you mean, man. And like you said, definitely a great start. And Jason, I mean, I'm not sure if he had appendicitis.
Yeah.
So I feel like that area could be pretty awkward in terms of having stitches or having pain. If you want to swing the baseball bat, probably not the most comfortable thing to do. You know, if you just got your appendix taken out. Jordan Schaefer's been getting some run in his stead. You know, started last night. Got 3 walks, 1 for 1, 3 walks and 2 stolen bases. So he's been an able replacement, at least offensively, for Hayward. I think we have to be thankful again to have the quality of backups that we do have. So like you said, when guys do go out, we always have a constant rotation of guys coming back in. And like to my man Chris Johnson, sort of having taken the backseat now that Freddie's back. But you know, like we talked about before, Asa, you know, big decisions on the horizon. You know, especially when you get Freddie, Jason, and Brian McCann back in terms of who plays, you know, when and how.
Yeah, because that's the thing. Getting McCann back, I'm excited for, but then you're. Sorry about that.
Yo.
Blog Talk Radio putting us off again. That is unacceptable. I'm going to have to write to their coordinators. Or bumping me off. I guess you were still on there.
No, I had to reconnect, so.
You did too.
They might bump me off too.
Wow. That's stupid, man. That shouldn't happen. Anyway, we were throwing off a little bit there. But yeah, dude, Jordan Schaefer has been admirable filling in. He has. But the top 2 spots in the order got to get it going. Simmons, he pops out too much. He's got good contact skills. I don't know if he's trying to swing for the fences, trying to get under the ball or what, but he pops out way too much. Got to at least put it in play, hit some hard grounders, some liners somewhere. Easier said than done against major league pitching, but he has the ability. He's shown that for stretches. So I like the Schaefer and Andrelton combo at the top in theory while Hayward's out, but we'll see how it works out in practice. I did correctly predict that BJ wouldn't be long for the top of the order, and while that's not rocket science when he's hitting 120, I don't know. Freddie's got a lot going on because the team's winning, but he still has a lot of things to work on, and it's exciting to be getting McCann back. That's only a couple weeks away, likely. Brandon Beachy tomorrow is going to go down and start his rehab assignment. McCann had an RBI single today down in Rome, Georgia, for the Rome Braves, Double-A Braves, and Brandon Beachy will get back maybe within a month, maybe a little bit less, who knows. So you got reinforcements coming. It's kind of a question of where Beachy will slot in the rotation. If Teron bounces back and he continues to limit the damage, he had a few bad games there but kept the team in the game, which everyone commended him for. I don't even know. He might have 1 loss or maybe 2 losses, but really gave the team a chance to win every time, even though he got shelled a little bit. Then last time out only gives up 2 runs against the Nats. So if he stabilizes and has a string of 3 or 4 good starts over the next few weeks, it's hard to say how you resolve the situation with Beachy coming back, because you know, you don't want to jerk Teron around too much. If he's going well, you maybe don't want to mess with it.
Yeah, you say so. Always, you know, interesting to see how guys sort of mix and mend and how rehab goes for them and how sort of transitions to the big league. So, like you said, guys, grateful for the fast start, getting things going quick, you know, getting out to that good league and lead in the NL East. But got to be mindful of developments in terms of guys' streaks and guys' health. So, things to look forward to on Braves country.
Yeah, no doubt. And they did lose today, but won 2 out of 3 against the Nats, and that's the team you got to beat. I mean, the Nats are really not looking that great right now themselves. They're having a lot of problems scoring runs. Strasburg has not been himself. Zimmerman's out. They have Rendon up from the minors to fill in for him, but Adam LaRoche has been abysmal. So really everyone except Bryce Harper has been blowing these nuts. So they have a lot of problems right now, but it doesn't mean they're not still a threat. You got to get as much room between you and them now as you can while you're hot and they're not, because you know they'll turn it on. They didn't win 98 games by accident last year, but maybe they came into this year with a little too much hubris. I'm not afraid to say that because they talk a big game, and ESPN and everyone else pretty much dubbed them the World Series champions this year. I mean, they were everybody's favorite to go all the way, and you know, not to say they still can't. They very well could. However, you come into the season, your manager's talking a big game, your star's talking a big game, your general manager's hyping you up. I don't know. Maybe you get a little too comfortable, and maybe you get, you know, you definitely are getting everybody's best shot. That's easy to say, but I don't think that's something that, I don't know how much substance that carries. It's kind of an esoteric thing that athletes can say that I don't think I can say. You know, I don't.
No, that's definitely true. And like you said, sort of you look at the natural progression of things and the guys that they have, sort of what they built, you know, you would think that this year would be the next step. And, you know, as it may be so far this year, it, you know, hasn't gone the way they expected it.
Yeah, no, I mean, they were due some regression, and Gio, before they got him, you know, we talked about this when foul territory first started, when the Nats were rocking Gio. I mean, he had a great year last year, but the 2 years prior, he led the American League in walks both years. Let me tell you something. The pitcher who leads the league in walks is never that good of a pitcher. It's just not possible. So, you know, maybe last year was the outlier for him, and if Strasburg isn't incredible, although Jordan Zimmerman has been incredible, it's not as fearsome of a rotation. It's still a quality one that holds up over the course of a season, but in a playoff series or in a short, you know, 3-game series to decide the division, it's not quite as terrifying. But let me give you a quick update from the San Francisco D softball rec league. We're talking about men's and women's. We're talking co-ed, and we're talking the Honey Badgers riding the top of the division. They've got a game on the Naugas. The Ligers sit 2 games back, and while they have a bye this week, a chance next week with a win to clinch a playoff berth. Top 2 teams from the division go to the playoffs, the citywide playoff, and the Honey Badgers are sitting pretty. They just got to win one more game to clinch that, but they want to do more than just that. They want to finish the season strong and take that division crown. So a little update on the Honey Badgers, of which I'm obviously a member, or else I wouldn't be talking up their fantastic exploits.
What is that? What's the average looking like right now, Asa?
Ooh, it's looking nice. It's unfortunately last year I think I was leading the team. Right now it's at about 700, but the OPS is pretty phenomenal altogether because there's been a homer on a bunch of doubles and triples, so I think the OPS is somewhere up around 1.7, 1.8.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So the numbers are pretty ridiculous, but we got some real hitters. I'm hitting out a leadoff spot these days because of my torrid base running.
Well, you got to, you know, you have a lot of competition in terms of the Eastern League over here on the East Coast for David Egger for the Triple Crown. You know, his team is definitely in the mix. They've played 4 games so far and undefeated. They are also looking to make moves in the playoffs starting up here pretty soon. So nice to see guys from 2 different leagues doing big things.
Yeah, I say we meet in the middle in a cornfield in Iowa and have it out in a 7-game series. You bring the beer.
That's awesome.
That's all I'm saying. And we're 5-1, but it's more than that. because our slogan, we have these awesome jerseys. I'll have to send you a picture. I'll put it on the Foul Territory Facebook page, which everyone always goes to, so we'll see it there. But
definitely.
Our jersey, it says Honey Badgers. It's got a sweet picture of a honey badger, and then the slogan at the bottom just simply says, "We don't care," which we huddle up and 1, 2, 3 yell at the end of every game. So although I do care, and I'm one of the more competitive ones, as a team, we collectively don't care, which makes the winning even more fun. And, you know, while the hitting's been going well, I have to say that I've made my name with base running, which didn't necessarily have the best wheels in baseball back in the day. I mean, I was fairly athletic, but at this stage of the game where we have some athletes interspersed with some people who would be ill-described as athletes, my base running, the speed combined with just the general aggression is works out well. There's no hit that isn't a double. No hit that isn't a double, no deep hit that isn't a triple or a home run. So that's my motto, kind of run till they stop me. And I have to say, I know I'm bragging, but that's only because we got all these beautiful, wonderful listeners here on Foul Territory. I know that I'm bragging, but last week I scored from second on a sacrifice fly, and it wasn't even that deep. And it was to a guy.
Wow. And you heard it here first. Don't think David Edgar has that sort of speed or alertness or base running savvy. But that's damn impressive.
Yeah, and so, like, obviously you got a banana out and you're taking the turn. You know you're going for it. There's no way you go straight and then straight. But I got cleats this year, and it's made a big difference. So
I'm sure it does. You got to get that traction. So that is awesome to hear. You guys are both killing it. And, you know, the lore of Ace of Beals just continues to travel east.
No doubt. Yeah, I'll have to get with David Edgar on the softball front. Well, Carson, my man, thanks for weathering the technical storm, so to speak, and getting with us, me, our listeners, and all of us. It's been another excellent episode of Foul Territory here on Back Sports Page, Blog Talk Radio, sponsored by SidelinesApp.com. Go check it out, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah. Oh, no. We're bringing it back. I thought it was gone. Can't escape it. James Harden needs to go bang style. Keep Houston in the playoffs.
All listeners and you two, Ace, need to check out J. Cole's new LP or EP called Truly Yours 2. Unreal. Let's get at
Truly Yours 2.
Truly Yours 2.
Okay.
If you go to his website, dreamvillain.net, the stream is on there. It's like 5 or 6 songs that he put out. His album's coming out the 25th. Of June, so just like a couple songs put out before and then didn't make the album, but it's impressed. Definitely take a look at that.
Well, that's a good plug for Mr. Cole. I'm a fan too. I didn't know about that particular EP yet, but I guess head over to dreamvillain.com. I was going to ask whether it's on Dat Piff, because that's my favorite website for all the latest.
It might be on Dat Piff. It probably is, to be honest, yeah. I'm looking right now. It's just 6 songs, so I'm sure it is on there. One of the songs on the EP.
5 mentions.
You said what?
I said, you hear that, Dat Piff? You just got 5 mentions.
Yeah, seriously. He's paying the payday for by the mention, and today is going to be a nice little paycheck for him. One of the songs on the EP is called Kenny Lofton. So.
Kenny Lofton?
Yeah, one of the songs called Kenny Lofton.
He never thought there would be a rap song about him. He could never have speculated that he would even be mentioned, much less the title. That's incredible.
Yeah.
I love that from J. Cole's standpoint. I love that for Kenny Lofton. A borderline.
Yeah.
He should be in the Hall of Fame. Like, he was borderline, but this bumps him over. Like, how many players in the Major League Baseball Hall of Fame have a rap song named after them?
That
I'm thinking
true.
Zero. Maybe Satchel Paige.
Not even Babe Ruth, Hank Aaron, nobody.
Nobody. Rogers Hornsby. Oh no, Jackie Robinson. There was I Jack, I Rob, I Sin. But
that was on the Brooklyn. We go hard.
All the listeners very much appreciate that vocal sampling. You're welcome, bitches. Man, well, I guess I should go cook some chicken wings because they've been defrosting.
Good stuff. Good stuff. And I will also eat some dinner or slash get ready for bed. But great episode again on Falteza.
Yeah, we'll be back at you once again next week. Same time. Knuckle butt.
Adios. Up on Gangnam Style.